Okay, this is sound roll number 72.
Okay, is there any glare on that?
For no. Fight in the Fields. Okay, this is sound roll number 72.
Okay, is there any glare on that?
For
no.
Fight in the Fields of Paradigm Production, we have a minus 8 dB reference tone to follow on the modulometer, which equals 0 VU. Okay, we're now starting camera roll 72. We're going to start the interview with Ben Maddock. We're in Sanger, California. And our first take will be take number one.
We went to see Apollo 13.
Again,
wow.
We'll be on camera roll 72.
How was it? This is
take one. Marker.
Interview with Ben Maddock. Ben, let's go back. I mean, all this is going back 20, 30 years, but let's go back to where you came from. I'm just fascinated by the fact that someone whose dad was an orange grower would end up spending 20 years organizing farm workers.
It doesn't seem funny to me. But when other people look at it, I've always been told that that it is strange. You know, during my whole thing with the farm workers, we used it a couple of times because I was an orange grower. I can remember when the Tulare County Orange Growers Association were having a meeting, and they were talking about the union, the whole thing. I went through. I wrote a letter and said my name is Ben Maddock, and my dad owns an orange grove in Woodlake. And so I want to be coming to the meeting. I went and did that. And and I used to get away with it a lot of times, walking to the meeting, because most of the people that was involved, the farm workers, you know, were Mexican or Filipino, and some of the time there were some volunteers. But I could easily go in to a lot of those meetings and just not even say who I was. And,
well, what was that story you were saying about this guy who said your dad was great, but his kids turned out bad?
Well, one time we had an election, orange election in Woodlake, and there was an orange grower there. And he said, Mr., you know, Norris Maddock was a hard-working orange farmer, and he worked very hard all his life, and all his kids turned out great. He just didn't know what happened to Ben. And I thought it was great because I told that to the workers, and they just laughed because I tell, you know, see, because if you're a little different than them, then all of a sudden they think something's wrong. No, and it's really interesting how I got involved in this whole thing, because I had no intentions of even going, you know. I went into labor because after I got out of service, I was in Fresno, and I wanted to become a tile setter, ceramic tile setter. And I did, but I went to work with this company, and we went on into Nevada. And then I got, after getting through with being a tile setter, I thought I wanted to go into something else. So I went into selling tile, and that brought me into Portland, Oregon.
And then one day a friend of yours says...
Yeah, one day this lady was going to this college, and it was kind of college too. That was a little off-center. She asked me, there's a guy from Delano coming. So I'm from the San Joaquin Valley. And I had talked to my folks about somebody organizing. And true quote, my dad said, there's a little Mexican communist down there in Delano organizing farm workers. And I thought, well, that'd be interesting to go see. And it was. I was really impressed with what he had to say. But it wasn't until a couple of years after that that I was working in. I kind of dropped out of society, and I always tell everyone I was become a bum, and I was just bumming around the country, and I wound up with my sister down in Richgrove, right outside of Delano, and the person that when we rented a house, rented an apartment. Is that the next person next door to me was Gilbert Padilla, the treasurer. And so when my sister left Richgrove, we did a lot of social things there in Richgrove. There's about three or four of us. But we went to work for the farm workers on a kind of a challenge.
Well, you were saying that you were always talking to Gilbert, telling him he didn't know what he was doing, aren't you?
Yeah, that was kind of...
Tell me that story.
Well, We'd get with Gilbert, and I just told Gilbert, I said, gee, you should be doing this and doing that. And one day he told me, so, well, if you're so smart, why don't you guys come and work for us? Well, we did. I decided to go to work for them for a month. And I was going to work in the newspaper office, El Macriado. And I told him, I said, I'll come and work for a month. Somebody said they'd go to work for 6 months, and I think one of the guys said 2 months. Well, those guys never lasted that long. None of them lasted more than a month, and I lasted 20 years.
But, you know, yeah? Where we started out with the conversation, you coming out of a family where your dad had raised oranges, the point I was making was that for most growers, it's like a line you would never cross. They're so dead set against that, and yet you really believed in this thing.
Well, I do, because I just think... See, my dad was a small orange grower. He had less than 40 acres, and my biggest problem was I seen the things that he had to go work to make, because oranges, it's a cash crop once a year, and some years it's good market, some years bad market. But he had five kids he had to feed. But I could see him working long hours. And he had to do, he used to irrigate his thing, and his orange grove at night. And he'd get up early in the morning, go to work, and he'd work all day and sometimes late hours. And I can just see, well, even for small growers, there's got to be something better. And for farm workers who I knew that lived up the street from us, there I seen their fathers go out and come back and find out how much they were making, and it's very, very little. And all of a sudden now I hear of a guy down in Delano wanting to organize. No, I had read about unions and other unions, but farm worker unions were just a thing of, it's happening. It would be great if it could happen.
But, I mean, when you heard about Caesar growing, you were starting out, you were a little skeptical. You read something.
Well, I think you're always skeptical when you, first place, organizing farm workers, who are you organizing? I had heard something about the Filipinos. They had been organizing. But they were organizing through labor contractors and through foremen. Well, I'm not sure that would really work. But I guess when I got down there and we really went to work, and I can remember about the fourth day after I went to work, well, a little longer than that, they was having a press conference. And I walked into the press conference because I was from the El Macriado. I was going to write the things down. Caesar chased me out because I didn't look like a farm worker or one of the volunteers at that time that he had. Because the volunteers, we had kids that come because they needed something to do, and we had other, I guess from, at that time we had some hippies there, and coming from all over, different walks of life. So when I walked in, and finally one of the guys said, no, he's a new person at Macriado. So they let me go in. But it was funny that he said, nah, you can't come here.
Now, you moved on from the Malcriado, and you really became more of an organizer than anything else. So to do that, you must have learned to speak good Spanish, right?
Well, most people would say that, but I can't even speak Spanish today. And I think I'm one of those people that learned to use whatever you can to make it work. I really loved the farm workers. I mean, I loved what I was doing. Who else would give somebody with no background into this? I'd say, and when I got out of Macriado and other things, I went to organize. All of a sudden one day they said, "Here's a contract. You got 7 or 8 ranches," and I think it totaled up to, I had something like 1,800 workers, and I didn't speak Spanish. And they said, "Well, here you got to go administrate this contract." Well, the first thing I did is I got to go find somebody out here that knows Spanish, and that's what I would do at each ranch. Find, I don't care if it was a man, woman, child, whatever, and start doing that, because I always felt that if I can teach that person, by that person translating for me or interpreting for me, they're going to pick it up. And that's exactly what happened. I, doing it, I met my wife through. She was a farm worker. And she, you know, she spoke English, and her, a lot of people in her crew didn't. So she'd become an interpreter. And then you learn from that. And there's been many things. One time, Caesar sent me to a place called Egg City, and I really thought it was a city. I thought, well, somewhere down in Southern California, there's a city, and I'll go find out where this egg ranch is there. Well, I found out the egg ranch was Egg City. It was out, it's between Moore Park and Santa Paula in that area, and Fillmore. And I got there when I got sent. I got sent on my birthday. And so I went down, and I got arrived there about 9 o'clock at night. And I walked up the picket line, and nobody spoke English. Until I kept looking until I found a 12-year-old girl that spoke English. And we started having meetings and from right then on. And I had no problem. People, I think it goes on trust. I think people all knew that whatever I did, I had really, I was very sincere about it.
So. Well, but I mean, let's change.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 72, and that was take one. We're now going to camera roll 73, and our next take will be take two.
What's that?
This is take two, marker.
So we were just talking about Egg City and how what you really have to do is get people to trust you, but it's really strange because here you come in, you don't look like them, you don't talk the language. I think a lot of people would be very suspicious, you know, farm workers, if you wander up and say, hi, buddy, join the union.
See, I don't, maybe some would. I really don't think anyone ever really did. I walked in, and the very first thing I was, I was sent by Cesar Chavez. And I think the things that I said probably made sense. I mean, I was there, I'm there to help you, what's going on. And I showed them things that we could do. And I become part of them. And I never become, I guess the only time that I really get, but I never did really get cognizant of the thing that I was the only one. But there's many times that I could be in, I would be the only white face in a, you know, sea of brown out there. But I never really had a problem with that.
But I mean, there's some precedent too, because Fred Ross was around. He'd been the one that brought Caesar to our guys. Tell me a little bit about Fred. What was he like?
Fred was a tremendous person. You know, he was a real taskmaster. He wanted things done, and he knew how they can get done to do it. Like going through his training, the Fred Ross system. I think it taught me one thing, and that is that you never leave anything to chance. If I said that we were going to meet today, and we did this a week ago, well, somewhere along the line, I would call you and say, are we still on? Then I'd call you again, and then on the final day, about an hour before, I'd call you again and say, is it still on? He never left anything to chance. You don't wait. You don't just say, we're going to meet next week. And the other thing is, if you're going to have a meeting with people, the meeting had to have purpose. And he always taught you, what you know, if you're going to, like the house meeting, how to do a house meeting. I've never seen anyone else try to do it his way. And he taught it one way, is that, you know, when you meet, you help the guy get the people there. You kept on track. You never excluded anyone in the family. If you're going to meet, you made sure the family was there. If there's a wife or a husband, you always bring them into it because it makes it a family. If the kids are old enough, not really tiny, you would get them involved. Again, it's family. Now, if you wanted to do something, then if you wanted them to come to a meeting, then you would, at that time, you would say, okay, we want to, well, on a certain time down the road, we want to have a meeting with everybody. But before you do that, now next week, I want you to go out and get a meeting, and you go get a meeting, and you go get a meeting. And then you would set them up. And then you'd follow up. The person you have to follow up and just make sure everything went. And if you do all the things right, your meetings are successful. If you try to do shortcuts, then there aren't, and that's where Fred was. Fred really planned a big boot because he really wanted you, because you, and you had to have a lot of, in Spanish, the word ánimo. You got to have ánimo. You can't be monotone. You gotta get out there and do it. And he was good. I mean, here's a person, and he did the same thing. And did you know, up until 1975, until when the law came in, Fred didn't speak Spanish either. All those years that he worked out there in the field with all those labor camps and all those people, he didn't either. And he finally learned so he can do a one-on-one. I can remember on languages, it wasn't until I went to Florida with Coca-Cola that I was, and I got into a meeting, a big meeting, and I never knew if I could organize in English. I got in Florida and I found out I could, because one time it was all the, we had all the black workers there, the American blacks, and I could do it. But I can remember right after that I went to another meeting and I got up and I was ready to say the same thing and get ready to get them going. And I turned around and they had an interpreter, because all of a sudden these people came from Haiti and they didn't speak the language either. So.
Well, organizing is tough work. Let's move on a little bit to later on. You met your wife in 73 during the strikes, and you went off on the boycott for a couple of years, and then the real big change was the law in 75. What did that mean?
Right. It mean that, you know, for the first time, for all up to that time, I came from the boycott that in 74, and I helped, you know, we helped get people to go to Sacramento to get the law. But what it really meant was, for the first time, we're going to get recognition. All you, what you had to do now, the law says we had a right to organize. The law said that you have a right to hold elections. And so we went, and so that's what we started doing. We during 1975 and early, we went and had those elections. And we were able to go back and win. We won a lot, but we lost some. And so, but people got a chance to vote.
And talk a little bit about that first election, the one you ran.
We had one, that one of the first ones we had was at the M. Carrotan Ranch. We did a very good job. It was really come down to the call was going to be between us, the United Farm Workers, and no representation. The Teamsters tried to get on the ballot, but they couldn't. They didn't have a shot. And all along, our whole thing was, we wanted to prove that in 1973, when the contracts went up and the Teamsters come in, we wanted to show all to the world that that was phony. They went out there and they had people signed up, didn't know what they're signing up for. We had a group of southern Yemenis workers there, and it was really, really strong. I mean, they had no shot. They had no intention of going to the growers. They would either, you know, they were socialists because their country is socialist, and they really it was strong. They had some northern Yemenis in the camp, and they almost ran them out because they were kind of for the grower. And it was.
And then tell me what it felt like that when you started counting the votes, and it didn't really.
Well, one thing, when they counted the votes, I wanted the press inside, because I really wanted everyone to see, because I didn't know if we win or not, but I knew this. I really wanted the world to see whatever happened. But when they started counting the votes, my heart, I kind of wanted to get out of there, because we lost. We went down about 15, and I can just feel, now what will Caesar say if I lose this election, right? But it turned around. We won 3-1. As it went longer and started going by, and I knew we made up to 15, and we started going out, then I couldn't wait to get outside. I mean, I just started, you know, the adrenaline really running then, because you know you won.
I mean, you know, when the reporter asked you how it felt, you said, great. That's sort of, what is it? What did it really feel like?
I just, you know, it's hard to say. I guess I could have cried just as much as I probably went out and said and smiled. I think the relief, and even the workers, you can see it in their eyes as you, you know, if you look at the tape, the workers, they knew what it meant. And I guess, and the grower, they knew too. He knew that for the first time that they always said that the workers really didn't want us. Well, a 3-1 victory, what could he say? I mean, he can sit there and say anything he wanted, but it wouldn't ring.
He said, did they know what they were voting for?
Yeah. Well, that's about the only thing he can say. Well, yeah, we told him, you want to go with the grower, you want to go with the union. Well, that's, they made up their minds. And, no, it that one rang up and down the valley.
That was the beginning of a wave, right?
Right.
What happened from there on?
Well, from then on, we lost some, and the Teamsters won some, and so, you know, I think and the growers got a lot more active against them because we had a lot of unfair labor practices and those things.
But in 75, and okay, let's talk.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 73 and the end of the sound roll. Goodbye. That was take two. Yes. Okay, we're now on sound roll 35 for Fight in the Fields, a paradigm prediction minus ATP reference sound to fall on the modulometer. Jiggles your review. Okay, we're now starting camera roll 74. Our next take is take three. We're continuing the interview with Ben Maddock.
This is take three, marker.
So we were just talking about how great it was to win the elections and to prove finally that what you'd been saying all along, that the farm workers wanted the union. But there was, the elections were sort of like a double-edged sword, weren't they? Wasn't there something, weren't there bad things coming with the law?
Yeah, well, because up until that time, everything we were doing was for recognition. You know, to ever since when Caesar started, he first started the union to get it recognized, get people to understand what it was. Well, once we got the law in, then the growers didn't turn to the law itself. How do I take them to court? How do I get things in court? And how do I keep them in court for many, many, many years? And it costs money. Well, if a grower could go out like Jim Ara, we had an election there. They created a lot of unfair labor practices, and it's fine, you know. But we didn't win the election. So you know, until you go to court and you get it overturned, but it's many years down the road. There was an interesting one. There was a guy that was fired from Gallo during the first, and it took him, you know, the election was in 75. It took him almost 14 years to win his case. Yeah, he won $90,000, $100,000 or around there, but he won his case. So what? He didn't work there. We lost the election. So all those things, you know, that's exactly what they were able to do, and that was a downfall.
So And that was, you know, and things were good to a certain point until 81, and then they got worse, right?
That's right. There was, well, you know, one time we had 95% of the citrus under contract in Ventura County. One decision took it out. Decision was that an association could pull, a grower could pull out of an association. Well, S&F growers, all the growers pulled out, and we had an association, we had a contract, and we had the workers. We had nothing to pick because all the growers pulled out. So all they had to do is if you had an election, then and then they would just quit the association.
And then what effect did the Duke Majan election and Sterling going on the board have?
That's just like, you know, the guy come to the end of it. They started putting anti-people on the board. And it was interesting. We had it set up. I can't remember the person's name that was on the board, but we had a majority. The very first thing Duke Majan did is offer him a judgeship, and he bailed out, and he got to put his appointments in. And after that, it just became less and less. But it even goes right back to the beginning. The very first we had the election in 75. Well, then in 1976, what did the legislature do? They defunded the act. And so it took a long time to get the money back into the act. And then, so we lost ground there, but it's always been. No one's really wanted to accept the right for farm workers to organize. And I don't care where it is, any part of the country. We've had some victories, but we've had many more setbacks.
Now, let's just digress from it. You were saying they defunded the act in 76, and that led to Proposition 14, they're trying to...
Yeah.
Fund the act. And tell me that story about when you, the little known story of Ben Maddox fast.
During Prop 14, is in the last weeks of it, Caesar decided, a challenge said that I'm going on a fast. And whenever things got, you know, they were tough, and he used this to help himself. And so, this wasn't one of those fasts where we made it public. Him and I decided we'd go on one. Well, it was 15 days, and I'd never been on a fast in my life. I did it, and I told him, and he used to laugh because he would drink some tea and honey and those things, and I would do the same thing, but I didn't like it very well. But I always carried. We were on the campaign, and every house we went to during the day, they'd have a new sandwich. So I'd take a sandwich, put it in my pocket, just to remind myself that I can eat if I wanted to. Now, I probably wouldn't look very good if I did that. So that's the way I got through it. The night we lost the election, I probably did the worst thing in the world. I went out and ate two steak sandwiches and really dearly paid because I don't think that was a thing to do. And Caesar, he broke his bed too. So we both almost died that night.
So the 80s were a rough decade for unions, and they were a real hard time for the farm workers, which is no surprise. But part of the issue, I mean, you can say that it was a bad time, and you can also say that Duke Majan sort of gutted the act. But you can also say that Caesar at a certain point didn't push to organize the way he had, and that so other things had changed. And how do you sort all that stuff out?
Well, I think one of the things that we did wrong, one of the things we did in the 80s was that we did something I thought was good. Because people kept saying Caesar ran everything. Everything went through him. So what we did, we broke up the crops into divisions. And I happened to have the citrus division. And I had complete control, the organizing and the contracts. And it put me into Florida. And one of the things we wanted to do in Florida was trying to expand, go into more... Because back when we won the other contracts back in 72, or 70. At that time, we went to Florida right away with Manuel Chavez, and we won Coca-Cola and a couple of others. Well, we want to do that again. But one of the biggest problems we found that I had was that we didn't really want, it didn't seem that we wanted to get out of California. I think we should have, and I think we should have drove it as hard along as we could, because that would, you would have, you would keep the momentum going into other places, and then when California finally, you can get it turned around.
Well, but the other thing that was happening in the 80s was that Caesar got interested in a lot of other things that didn't have so much directly to do with organizing, like building houses and those things, and direct mail. And that made the union a different place, didn't it, really?
Well, the direct mail made money, raised money. And one thing you got to do if you're going to help farm workers, you got to have money. When this contract started declining, you had to raise money. And the direct mail was a way to do it. Getting into the houses, again, that was under the farm worker, service center. And they, it's a way to help farm workers. You know, the whole thing is we needed to do is to help farm workers, and there's many different ways. If you go back to the early contracts, if you go into Fresno County, you know, a very heart-rendering thing was to go out into the west side and walk into the houses and find they all had dirt floors, and found out that you had houses with dirt floors, but the community bathrooms were for men and women, and you had families. Housing is still in a great need today.
No, I agree that it's a need, but it was a change in focus. You know,
yeah.
And part of, all the changes in focus, a lot of people who were connected with the union said, well, that's good, but that's not what I came here to do. And a lot of them left, and you stayed.
Well, I guess maybe I wasn't so high idealist as some people. I stayed because I still think there's a way to help farm workers. Even today, I think there's a way to help farm workers. One of the things we haven't talked about is the hardest thing I found on farm workers was that it's not like in the steel mills. You go out in the steel mills, you organize the people, and then maybe there'll be somebody retire and a new one come, and you organize that one person. But during my whole time in the farm workers, man, there was wave after wave after wave. The first wave used to come into the fields. Nowadays, the only people stay in the fields was the newest people from a new country. The other ones, once people found a way to New York and found a way to Chicago, because there used to be airplanes in L.A. No, the immigration wasn't at the airport. You know, a person go fly to Chicago, and all of a sudden they get jobs, and then when they go back to their villages, there's a trail now into the...
Let's talk a little bit about... Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, we need to change. How much is there left? 1 foot?
No.
Okay.
We can squeeze.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 74. That was 2, 3. We're now going to camera roll 75, and our next take would be take 4.
Then we can say we was framed.
Making it more difficult.
Okay.
Rolling.
This is take 4.
You have speed?
Yes.
This is take 4. Marker.
The subject is Caesar. You were just saying he could talk to you about anything. Go ahead.
He could.
Caesar.
He knew.
Now start off with Caesar.
All right, Caesar?
Yeah, Caesar.
Okay, Caesar knew one thing, and he would do this all the time. If he wanted something, he already knew who he wanted to do it. And he knew, but he would do it because what he would do, he'd make you talk yourself into it. Many different things that I know that, later, you can feel, man, he knew what he wanted. And that was like one time, right when I started with the farm workers, I worked in the Mama Macriato then. they formed a new division called Il Telegrafico, and that is the buttons and the pens and that whole thing. And he wanted somebody to take it over. And so we went through a three-hour meeting up in La Paz one day, and sitting there, finally, you know, because I told people that I, you know, from my background that I'd sold some stuff and this, and all of a sudden, when I said, well, I'll do it, the meeting's over. He said, oh, okay, meeting's over. And he knew. And he knew that he tightened that noose. And the other things, like when, in organizing, a lot of times, he would want something done, and he'd get people to start, you can get in a meeting and bring you along, and all of a sudden that when you hit a certain point, then it'll be over. It's because he got out of you what you wanted. And everybody, I wasn't the only one that he would do that with many people.
But you wouldn't feel manipulated. You'd feel impressed by the process.
Well, I never felt manipulated. I always felt that's what I, you know, I said it, and that was probably the easiest way to get me to buy into it, that if you go through the whole process, and he paints the picture of where you should be. And I thought that was very clever, because he would never directly tell you to do something. He would always, don't you agree that we should do this? If you don't mind, would you like to do this for me? You know, and yeah, is it good or bad? You do it.
The other time we were talking, you were saying that you know, at the point where everyone moved up to La Paz, you didn't want to move to La Paz, and he wasn't sure what else you were good for.
Well, that was right after after I was working with the Tire Graphical, they moved it up to La Paz, and I definitely didn't want to go up there. It's too far away. Again, it was doing something that maybe you would do commercially. You'd work and you're all the way from the workers, and I wanted to be there. And so that's when he told me that, well, I could stay in Delano, but I had to become an organizer and working on the ranches. And I told that, and he didn't think that would happen. But within 2 months, I had more people at my meetings than anybody else.
Tell me about him giving Frank Ortiz, said, well, send him out for 30 days. What was
that story? That's the same thing. He just told Frank. Frank Ortiz was the guy that was running it and said, send him out for 30 days. He'll
start
die.
Over again and say, Frank Ortiz was the guy that was running Delano, and Caesar right. said, so we know what you're
talking about. Frank Ortiz was a farm worker that was running Delano. And when I left El Macriado, I didn't want to go to La Paz, but... And so Caesar gives me to Frank and said, run him out there for 30 days. Then he'll be gone. Well, when I first came, they said, I said it'd be a month in the last 20 years, and that was part of it. No, everything that I did I thought was great. And there's so many stories that you really leave out. If you really start talking about what happened, There's just a lot of them. I was at the village when they shot at it. They used to shoot at the 40 acres. I went to a field in the 1973 election. I mean 1973 strike. Was out at Tenneco, and you're standing there, and all of a sudden a worker pulls out a gun and shoots. Luckily, no one got shot. But during that same time, we had people, you know, the strike ended over two people getting killed that year. One in Arvin, well, both down in, one in Lamont and one in Arvin.
Let's talk a little bit more about Caesar. And you worked very closely with him. And sometimes it was sort of a rough relationship, wasn't it?
I always thought it was kind of very rocky sometimes, because I spent a, they
would
needed...
Would you just start over and say, working with Caesar okay. was
very rocky? Well, working with Caesar was very rocky. And it's what, with me, because sometimes we'd agree on things, sometimes we didn't. And especially when we were traveling, you know, in Prop 14 we traveled. I was the head of security at that time. And it was fun. There was you know, it's fun, but it was still, there was, you seen, you know, he liked to do things that he had, he needed to do. And, but smoking, you know, I can remember a couple of times when I wanted to get him mad. I'd just smoke, and then he'd get mad, and he'd throw me in the back car. So, you know, if you wanted to get away. But
he was really a very unusual person, wasn't he?
Well, you know, I've been around hundreds of people. And by him, I thought I had the opportunity. I met, you know, at that time, Jimmy Carter, president of the United States. I met him. When I met people that I would never have met without being associated with farm workers. And but being around him, you know you're part of history. He had the uncanny way of knowing what was going to happen. You know, it's like looking at things, and he knew what had to happen. His last fast, if he could have lasted 3 or 4 more days, I think we go to one wake-up. I think we might, maybe, if he would have started the fast a year, you know, 6 months later, maybe we would have been further along on the boycott and could have won it. But it really come, I'm saying, it really, we went from no, hardly any, anyone knowing about the boycott to at the end, you know, he had all those people. During that during that fast, you know, he was named the person of the week on one of the, I think that thing's on
ABC, yeah, right?
ABC it was.
How much do we have left? 150. Oh, okay.
Where's my glasses?
Glasses.
Straight down.
My glasses. Wait a minute. I just want to regroup for a second. Okay. Take a moment. Take a moment for a second.
Okay, that's the end of take. 4. Take 5 will be next.
I want to meet with workers. And then you get on the phone right there, have to call the workers 200 miles away and say, we're coming.
Yeah.
And because he could not sit still.
That's a good thing to say for the camera.
Yeah.
Kind of sums him up.
Yeah, let's.
And that was all track.
100. Rolling.
This is take 5. Marker.
Okay, just one more time briefly about Caesar could talk you into anything.
Anytime he wanted.
Let's start out. Okay. Anytime Caesar wanted, he could talk you.
Anytime Caesar wanted something, and, you know, he'd pick the person that he wanted that to do or thought could do it, he'd talk him into it. There's no, he never missed. If he wanted you to do it, and finally, I know there's hundreds of times when I did something and I finally said, he got me again. And maybe I didn't want to do it, but you found out doing it. Like, you know, he couldn't ever sit still. Here's a man that, he did a lot of catnapping and everything, but then he would go. He reads. The man is a reader like I've never seen anybody else. He'd read a book at night, still think about what to do the next day. And I know just an instant, we was in Florida one time, and something happened, and we had no meeting. And the first thing he said, no, well, let's go for a drive. We drive down toward the Keys, got halfway down. And he decided he had some great thing. He said, oh, I think I want to talk to the workers on this. So we stopped at a telephone halfway down to Key West and set up a meeting in Fort Pierce, which was way up the other direction. And we went back and had the meeting. I mean, he couldn't sit still. He was always thinking and always, a lot of people said, you know, he had ideas. A lot of ideas, and he got those across.
Well, let me go back to your relationship with him. You stayed for 19 years, but you finally left. Did you leave because you didn't believe in it, or did he try and talk you out of it, or?
No, it's time to go. My time was to go. I was 55 years old, and it was time to go. Because of the farm workers. You know, there isn't a, you know, there's no real retirement and those things. So it's just time. I think things were changing again. And I didn't think I was going to fit in that change. Chris Hartmeyer just left, and I didn't really like that. And I think sometimes you see the handwriting on the wall, and you say, well, it's time to go and go on down the road. Life's too short to hit. I think, and I always said when I first came, as long as it's fun, I'll stay. And at the end, it wasn't that much fun. But 20 years on a one-month commitment, I thought was great. You know, it's a lot of fantastic things happened during that period of time. And would I do it again? Yeah, I probably would, you know.
What really stands out, if you had to say one moment with Caesar, one experience with, what's really there?
I don't know. I guess the thing that stands out the most, the time when I was elected the third vice president, here's a non-farm worker coming and joining and not really thinking I want to, you know, not ever thinking that I would ever get to there. But the day I was elected to that position, I thought that was fantastic, you know.
When year was that? What year was that?
Was it 82? Mm-hmm. Around 82, 84. I mean, in there.
It's remarkable.
So.
Okay, let's stop. We did. Let's be stuff. We got the rest of it.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll. 75.
No, I think
very
we're
nice.
Done. Thank you, Ben. That's really.
Well, I hope you got what you wanted.
We got what you said, what you wanted to tell us, and that was what we wanted. We wanted the things that were important to you.
And I'll probably think.
Good memories.
Yeah, I'll probably think of 1,000 things I could have said.
Well, it's
no,
it's.
Okay.
Yeah, you want? I'm sorry. We have to sit still for sound now for a second. Don't squeak.
Okay, this will be room tone. Everybody quiet, please.
Oh, I thought you lifted on purposely.
That's the end of the interview with Ben Maddock. That was room tone, and that's the end of the sound roll. Bye bye.
Some sort of fancy bulb that's like half. It puts